A Story Publishing presents Winter's Cipher, Prologue. The summer of 2025 lays itself across the Balkans like a fever blanket. Humid, electrical, restless. From low orbit, the night side of Europe looks calm enough. Motorway strings pulsing amber, Adriatic ferries crawling like fireflies, the long scar of the Danube glimmering silver under moonwash. Yet every intelligent satellite that drifts above this quadrant leaves its sensor doors open a fraction wider, for the algorithms have begun to mutter the same unease. Signals traffic outpacing tourist season, freight convoys tagged with mismatched manifests, and a curious increase in field hospitals along river towns that are officially at peace. At ground level, the tension feels less theoretical. Border police on the Hungarian plains have traded their fluorescent wands for Israeli-made optics. Romania has invited a Belt and Road security detail to patrol its customs docks. Serbia, never one to waste a good memory, polishes old grudges the way priests polish relics. In cafes from Novi Sad to Niš, you can overhear arguments about which will arrive first, Chinese investment returns, Russian retaliation, or NATO's apology for last time. Nobody mentions the fourth possibility aloud, that history might simply loop until every accent in the Balkans is spoken with a jaw clenched against déjà vu. 200 kilometers of riverbank hold the story's fuse. The Danube, third longest in Europe and first in bad ideas, has always been an artery for whatever the continent would rather not discuss in daylight. Smuggled diesel, forgotten warheads, girls who never reach Vienna, algorithms that can steer a drone through fog by taste alone. This summer, a fresh commodity joins the current, payloads of raw telemetry stolen from half a dozen missile tests in the Arctic Circle. Whoever stitches that code into the right guidance chip will be able to bend hypersonic steel the way a street magician bends spoons, and every service branch east of Berlin knows it. The files have already been separated, encrypted, mislabeled as Albanian sea urchin quotas, then loaded onto commercial servers in Budapest. What none of the competing buyers realize yet is that a single checksum line has been removed and hidden inside an ordinary consumer device small enough to fit a soldier's breast pocket. That omission matters to four people now threading the maze of a swollen Belgrade, each ignorant of how close their paths already run. Colonel Sergei Baranov eases his matte black Lada 2107 beneath the sodium haze of Kneza Milosha Street. He is a man who trusts engines more than colleagues, so he listens for the idol's exact tremor rather than the police sirens ricocheting three blocks away. The colonel's shaved scalp catches glints from streetlight, his pale eyes steady on the rearview where a smear of clove gum marks the lower edge. In the glove box, a manila folder stamped Austri-Klinik, sharp blade, containing photographs stitched by AI from airport CCTV, and a list of 10 Serbian phone numbers to be disconnected from their owners by dawn. He chews. He waits. He thinks of the cousin who bled out on a Ukrainian roadside because somebody, perhaps the man in those photos, sold targeting intel for the price of a renovated kitchen. Across the river bend, a 31-year-old mechanic named Luka wipes diesel from his knuckles with bread paper that once held cevapi. His tugboat, the Silver Sturgeon, fidgets against its ropes at the Zeman Quay, craving upriver contracts that never arrive on time. Luka whistles a folk riff older than the Soviet Union, but his right hand keeps drifting to the brass St. Nicholas charm hidden in his boot. Somewhere out on the current, a Chinese patrol cutter has begun random inspections, and Luka's engine manifest is, at best, creative. For now, he watches the gulls fight over a crust and tells himself he will not carry contraband tonight. He knows better than to trust his own promises. Three neighborhoods inland, beneath fluorescent tubes that buzz like agitated hornets, Misha Varga coaxes life from a 1960s Grundig shortwave. He is early 40s, sleep-starved, stubble-salted by worry, and he repairs obsolete radios because obsolete things do not shout back. When the solder joint finally catches, he allows a tight grin, then wipes his brow with a tissue already stippled by nosebleed. The migraine that stalks him most days lurks just beyond focus, painting static at the rim of his vision. On the shelf beside the bench waits a yellow, prepaid phone, silent for the moment, though its battery has been charged since noon. He pretends not to watch it. Far outside Serbia's borders, in a wine cellar repurposed as a listening post near Lake Geneva, a linguist who now calls herself Mara scrolls through intercepted chatter while a glass of late-harvest Riesling warms at her elbow. She is the only one in the room who recognizes the pattern nested inside an innocuous Serbian weather bulletin. She is certainly the only one who cares that the phrasing is two glyphs off from anything the legitimate channels use. Mara runs a fingertip over the waveform, memorizing the cadence. Her handler wants to authorize a kill team if confirmation lands. Mara, gazing at the digital oscillations, whispers a gentler idea to the room's fluorescent silence. The city clock in Belgrade clicks toward 5. Humidity thickens until air conditioners begin their daily tantrum. A tram wire somewhere pops sparks that flutter to earth like dying fireflies. Street vendors align pyramids of bruised peaches beneath striped awnings, unbothered by the rumor that inflation will double by autumn. A loudspeaker outside the ministry cracks to life with a tourism jingle that no tourist can translate. Inside the small radio shop on Gavrila Principa, the yellow phone vibrates once, twice, then steadies into stillness. Misha stares until the migraine scribbles silver comets across his right eye, then flips the device open. 8 Cyrillic characters glow on the cracked display. Zima Yastigla. Winter has arrived. The phrase is as obsolete as half the radios on his bench and twice as dangerous. He whispers a curse, kills the shop lights, and reaches under the counter for something wrapped in black electrician's tape. At precisely the same moment, Colonel Baranov slips the Lada into gear. His taillights blink red across a curtain of drizzle as he noses toward the old quarter, toward a street named after a man who once started a world war with a pistol. Luca, sensing rain, walks the deck to taste the first drops and wonders whether miracles or bullets will reach him faster this season. In the Geneva cellar, Mara's monitor redraws its spectrogram to accommodate new input. Belgrade cell tower, unknown IMEI, message length 8 bytes. She highlights the string, exhales through clenched teeth, then begins composing the one directive that might keep a blood debt from turning into a massacre. None of them hear the Danube's low rumble as cargo barges shift their ballast for another day's deception. None feel the subtle tremor underfoot when a weathered transformer on Kneza Milosha absorbs a silent overload. All 4, however, will taste the same metallic tingle on their tongues before the sun climbs over the Zvezdara Observatory, an omen that smells like rain but tastes like cordite. By sunrise, a shop window will blossom outward in powdered glass, a black Lada will abandon the curb in smoke, a tugboat engine will stutter awake against its own better judgment, and a woman thousands of kilometers away will decide how many people must bleed to keep a single line of code from reaching its last bracket. For now, the phone in Misha Varga's trembling hand fades to a dull, anticipatory glow, and the city holds its breath, the way smokers do just before the match flares. End of prologue. Dawn sneaked in through slatted louvers, bruising the formica walls of the back-alley cafe the color of weak tea. A ceiling fan swayed overhead, its bearings whining like an old soldier's knees. Misha Varga sat in the corner booth, the one with a sagging vinyl seat and a drive-by view of Knez Milosha Street. His espresso had gone cold. Bitter mud clung to the cup, a single brown ring marking how long he'd waited. Across the table, a man in a fraying linen coat slid a sky-blue duffel toward him. No handshake, no greeting, just the rasp of nylon over cheap laminate and the faint clink of metal buried inside. Outside, trolley wires crackled. Misha rubbed the heel of his hand over his right temple where a migraine had begun to scribble silver arcs across his vision. 6 months from now, he thought, and already it feels like a confession. The fan squeaked out one last wobbling rotation. The moment shattered, Belgrade rewound to present day, humid, smog-draped, ordinary enough to fool an optimist. Misha hunched over a battered Grundig radio in his repair shop on Gavrila Principa. Fluorescent tubes buzzed overhead, strobing the cramped room. Solder fumes, coiled copper, a jar of cracked vacuum tubes. He pinched a glowing iron between nicotine-stained fingers, the tip giving off a sour hiss each time it kissed the board. Every few breaths, he flicked ash into an overstuffed coffee tin. On the shelf, a yellow phone vibrated. Once, twice, then silence. He ignored it, probably another debtor pleading for time. Instead, he pried loose a resistor, replaced it, and snapped the chassis shut with the satisfaction of a man completing the only task he could still control. But the migraine pulsed harder. He straightened, massaging the knot at the back of his neck. In that small gesture lay a catalog of regrets, vertebrae worn thin from years hunched over radios, a thumb that perpetually hovered over his wife's contact before drifting away, the corner of a family photo, half-folded, marshaled beside a stack of stamped repair tickets. He locked the cash drawer, three turns left, one right, then pocketed the key. The day was young, yet already smelled of burnt insulation and July rain. A dull pop echoed from the alley transformer. Lights flickered. When they steadied, a new text glowed on the burner wedged beneath his solder mat. Zima, Gestigla. Winter has arrived. The dead-drop phrase no one had dared use since 19. Misha set the iron gently in its stand, exhaled through his nose, and began the exit ritual he'd rehearsed in nightmares. Cash bundles went into a rolled gray sock, elastic still strong. A half-charged burner phone slid into his breast pocket. He tugged up two floorboards beside the counter and retrieved a passport that smelled of must and mothballs. The final act. He reached under peeling linoleum and gave the fishing line a modest yank, feeling the tripwire slacken. Across the narrow street, rain started again, thin drops that pinged satellite dishes and carried the metallic odor of old tram cables. Misha tipped his cigarette toward the grimy window, watching the ember reflect in glass like a dying planet. Somewhere in that reflection, the Black Lada was already approaching, though he hadn't yet heard it. First, he heard a child. Little sneakers scuffed outside, followed by a marble tapping across pavement, escaping small fingers. It rolled under the door, hopped a crack in the linoleum, and clacked to a stop against the metal leg of Misha's workbench. He stooped, pocketed the glass bead, green with a swirl of white that looked vaguely like the Danube at dusk, and placed it atop the radio, a private omen. Tires hissed to a stop. The Lada's engine idled with a soft, throat-clearing rumble, and through the smudged pane, Misha made out the silhouette of Colonel Sergei Baranov behind the wheel, close-cropped skull catching stray light. In the passenger seat, the driver, new by the slump of shoulders, spoke in rough Serbian. Stali smo, šefe, ovaj klošar joše nutra? Baranov didn't answer. He seldom did. Misha's pulse tagged along with the buzzing fluorescence. He inhaled one last drag, stubbed the butt under his heel, and edged toward the back door, knees creaking like the fan from the cafe dream. A quick stretch, lumbar discs protested, then he unlocked the exit and stepped into the service alley. Distant sirens wailed at a pitch suggesting they hadn't yet chosen a direction. He counted to three, then four. No movement from the Lada. Good. The fuse on his homemade charge was short but predictable, 8 seconds between trigger and bloom. Seven. He jogged toward the alley mouth. Puddles splashed up oily rainbows against his cuffs. Six. Behind him, fluorescent tubes sang their final note. Five. A cat darted across his path, fur arched, eyes yellow and wild. Four. The air thickened with the taste of corroded copper. Three, he heard his own breath, a ragged, lonely bellows. Two, a child's voice, Mama, Moha Loptica. One, the shop erupted, an abrasive, concussive snap rather than a Hollywood roar. Windows belched powdered glass, fluorescent guts rained onto the sidewalk like brittle snow. The blast wave smacked Misha's back, propelling him forward in an ungainly skid. Cordite filled his nostrils, mingling with the alley's dead rat musk. He stumbled into Gneza Milosha proper, arms pinwheeling, boots finding traction at the last second. Across the lane, the Lada rocked from the shockwave, hood catching shards of light. Baranov's driver jerked the door open, coughing curses. Yebem musve, upalio ye vatru. Misha didn't wait for translation. He sprinted south, soaked sneakers slapping pockmarked asphalt. Rain thickened, drilling his scalp, smearing soot into gray rivulets. Sirens modulated, closer now, converging. A left turn, then a right, threading wire narrow passages behind a row of kiosks selling pirated DVDs and knockoff cell phone cases. Neon flickered overhead. Hotspot, the O sputtering like a laryngitic bulb. Misha vaulted a waist-high crate of cabbages, knees reminding him he hadn't stretched enough. At the rear of the market, a rusting grate covered the storm drain. He bent, hooked fingers through the grillwork, and heaved. Ligaments protested, the grate groaned, then gave way, revealing a dark throat exhaling mildew. From the street came the distinctive metallic slam of the Lada's trunk, followed by Baranov's measured baritone carrying through the market chaos. Gospodine Varga, down here you'll find only mud and rats. Come back. We can discuss civilly. I've heard your version of civil, Misha thought. He lowered himself into the opening, palms scraping algae-slimed iron. The grate clanged shut above him, dimming daylight to a sick pewter hue. Runoff drummed overhead like a headcount too large to tally. Down the tunnel he walked, ankle deep in water cold enough to numb doubts. He allowed himself a single look at the marble in his fist. Still bright, still mocking the darkness, before pocketing it beside the photo fragment. Let them jostle. Ghosts liked company. Somewhere behind him, Baranov's shoes clicked along concrete, patient as a metronome. The colonel carried no flashlight. He trusted discipline and a killer's hearing. Misha permitted a grin. For once, the colonel might trust too much. Ahead, the tunnel elbowed left into heavier gloom, and the migraine that had plagued him all morning finally flared, drawing a white corona around every hint of light. Pain was an old acquaintance, never a friend, but predictable. Predictability could be weaponized. He kept moving, counting the echoes of his steps, mapping steel rungs overhead for later ascent. Sirens dwindled, replaced by the chuckle of draining stormwater. It sounded almost like applause, though he knew better than to assume victory. This was just a messy opening act, a fuse that would carry him, willing or not, toward that sky-blue duffel waiting 6 months ahead. In the meantime, he had tunnels to memorize, a forged passport to collect, and a body still capable of running, at least until morning made promises it couldn't keep. Rust pooled on the back of Misha's tongue, iron sweet, nauseating. He spat, the sound swallowed by the endless drip of condensate. One cough knifed up his throat, rattling a rib that already felt hairline cracked from the blast. He thumbed the loom on his battered Vostok. 1947. 12 minutes late. In the trade, 12 minutes could be the span between life and an anonymous hole in the levee. He pressed a palm against the tender spot beneath his left arm, hissed, then pushed deeper into the tunnel. Each step sent a dull cymbal strike through cartilage and bruise. Water rose to mid-calf, peat brown, stinking of moldy bread. Up ahead, a lone filament bulb swung from frayed wiring, its pendulum arc carving half-moons of light across concrete ribs. That light meant the forger hadn't spooked. Yet. Misha slowed, knife loose in his hand, blade reversed. He curled behind a bend graffitied with partisan slogans rubbed illegible by decades of runoff. Beyond it lay a pocket chamber where the Zeman storm line met the old Austro-Hungarian brickwork, a place forgotten by everyone except night creatures who needed signatures more than sleep. The bulb swung wider as he rounded the corner. There, on an overturned ammunition crate, sat Ilya, the artist Kristich, sleeves rolled, spectacles slipping down a sweat-slick nose. A transistor radio crackled beside stacks of lamination pouches. From its tinny speaker bled an upbeat synth riff, Bijelo Dugme, 1985. Puni iza pjevaj moja Jugoslavio. Spit and sing my Yugoslavia. Whoever programmed that irony deserved hazard pay. Ilya didn't rise, he just tilted his head like a crow assessing roadkill. Varga, you look like you lost a fight with your own obituary. Still prettier than your passport photos, Ilya, Misha shot back, voice laced with dry sarcasm despite the pain in his rib. Ilya flicked the radio louder with a nicotine-yellowed finger. Music soothes the nerves. I double the price since your colonel friend sniffed around. Danger tax. Misha eased closer, eyes mapping exits, the upstream shaft he'd come through, a rusted service ladder pitching to street level, and a drain gutter wide enough for a child, not a grown man. Doubles cute. We pre-agreed 10. He tossed a vacuum-sealed bundle, notes crisp, Serbian dinars that would be worthless across the border but accepted here for nostalgia. The plastic thumped, slid. Ilya didn't touch it. The colonel offered 20 to delay you. Ilya's grin showed crooked incisors. I'm asking 24. Inflation. The synth hook hit its chorus. Ilya popped the battery cover of a headlamp, changed cells with the precision of a jeweler. Misha kept breathing, slow, measured. Pain in, pain out. Make it 17, Misha said, and you walk out alive to spend it. Ilya's headlamp clicked on, bright coin of LED slicing the gloom, right into Misha's eyes. Blinded, he felt rather than saw the forger's hand dip under the crate. A hinge creaked, the telltale cadence of a spring-assisted blade. No more bargaining. Misha snapped sideways, light skated past as a knife whistled through the space his throat had occupied. He stepped inside the arc, caught Ilya's wrist, twisted, cartilage popped. Ilya shrieked, steel clanged, slid wet across concrete. The radio blared on, keyboard stabs like manic applause. Ilya balled his free fist and slammed Misha's rib, fireworks behind Misha's eyes. He buckled, weight folding forward, but memory of field drills took over. Elbow up, he hammered Ilya's temple. Once, twice. The forger staggered, glasses skittering away. Heartbeats splintered into drum fills, thud, thud, thud. Ilya dove for the fallen blade. Wet soles slipped. Misha kicked, caught a kneecap. Ligament tore. Ilya's howl echoed down sewage corridors. He rolled, one pant leg soaking filth, fingers finally closing around the knife. Too late. Misha stamped the wrist with boot heel, heard bones fissure. The blade skittered again. He snatched it mid-slide and plunged. The first thrust kissed shoulder, not lethal. Second found the unprotected hollow beneath the collarbone. Warm arterial spray misted Misha's cheek, drowned out by Ilya's broken windpipe croak. Synth strings kept playing, defiantly cheerful. Ilya slumped against a graffiti-tagged pipe, blood sluicing along rust grooves. Misha crouched, not gently, pried a canvas satchel from beneath the crate. Inside, a still-damp Hungarian passport bearing a photo of a man who resembled him after better sleep, a Romanian visa stamp already inked, a strip of Polaroids, and a folded metro map smeared with thumbprint grease. He wiped his hands on Ilya's shirt, stood. The forger's eyes tracked him, pleading. Misha knelt again, pressed two fingers to Ilya's carotid. Pulse faint. Inflation catches everyone, he murmured, and closed the failing lids. Practicalities cut sentiment. He upended a dusty plastic jug, stale bottled water, label half-peeled, and rinsed crimson off fingers. The liquid stung split knuckles. He stripped socks soaked in sewer brew, replaced them with the only spare pair he carried. Gray army issue, toe-stitched by his mother ages ago. Each mundane movement felt illicitly calm, quiet chores, while a man leaked life 3 meters away. Before leaving, he yanked the radio's battery. Silence fell, sudden, absolute. The dead deserve quiet, even treacherous ones. He took the ladder. Rungs rattled. Every upward haul clawed at the rib, sweat fogging his vision. When the hatch plate refused first try, he shoulder-checked it. Soft clank, then Belgrade's night air rushed in. diesel fumes, cigarette ash, the distant shout of soccer fans, Gardosh Hill. Cobbles glimmered under sodium vapor. Downslope, the Danube glowered ink blue, barges blinking port and starboard lights like eyes that refused sleep. The Safehouse pub sat 2 kilometers away, tucked behind a tram junction. Foot patrols roamed tonight, too many uniforms for comfort. Tram it is, he thought. He kept to shadows of stone cottages until the clatter of Line 11 grew. The tram screeched to a stop, doors sighing. He boarded through the rear, tossing 50 dinars into the fare box. Neon ads flickered inside. Budget dental implants, cut-rate crypto seminars. Cabin smelled of wet raincoats and ozone from overhead wires. He sat near a mother rocking a pram. The baby stared at him, unblinking, snot bubble quivering. Misha turned away, flexed aching fingers, felt Ilya's blood tacky at the cuticles despite rinsing. Each jolt of track teased marrow. He stared through scratched windows, Danube embankment, shuttered souvenir kiosks, a street guitarist noodling under a busted lamppost. One stop before the pub, he pulled the emergency cord, stepped off while the tram still crawled, boots slapping ballast. He cut through a courtyard where laundry hung despite drizzle. Bedsheets slapped his face like reprimands. At the far wall, a rat the size of a loaf stared with shameless entitlement. Out of my way, cousin. The rat didn't budge. Misha detoured. The pub was an old customs shed repainted bottle green, signboard reading Kafana veteran, though no veteran ever drank here. Inside, wood smoke and frying onions. Luca stood at the bar, dockhand shoulders crowding space, pint of Nikshichko tilting in grease-stained fingers. Engine oil tattooed his cuticles black. A St. Nicholas charm winked from his bootlace. Varga. Luca's grin split wide, river rough. Heard you lit fireworks downtown. City council send you the bill. My civic contribution. Misha slid onto the stool, biting back a wince as Rib complained. Hope your boat's quieter. Sturgeon's coughing like a tuberculosis ward, Luca said, chuckling. But she'll float. You bring the 50? Misha tapped the canvas satchel now nesting under his jacket. Half now, half when we clear the iron gates. Luca whistled. Spoken like a man who died twice already today. You look awful, by the way, like you French kissed a blender. Better than dating one, Misha shot back, prying the satchel. He exposed a wad of euro notes wrapped in a rubber band thin as dental floss. Luca's eyebrows rose, but humor held. While Luca counted, Misha ordered tea. His stomach shrugged at alcohol tonight. He sipped, scalding tongue, eyelids fluttering. The pub's radio, always a radio, tuned to lo-fi sports commentary. When the announcer shouted, "Goo!" Luca flinched as if a shell had landed. "All square," Luca said, stuffing bills into a pizza grease envelope. "We shove off midnight. Colonel's dog's been sniffing along the quay. We keep our wake small, engines at quarter till we clear Ada Bridge." A waitress slid a plate of chivapi his way. The smell flipped his gut, yet he forced down 2, protein as medicine. 2200 hours. Time to vanish again. They stepped outside where drizzle turned to needling rain. Street lamps buzzed. Misha lit a Drina. Luca flicked a cheap Bic to his own stub. Smoke coiled, quickly torn by wind, barreling off the river. Across the junction, 2 silhouettes idled near a kiosk, cheap black umbrellas, stance too rigid to be drunk locals. One lifted a phone, angle unmistakably camera level. Misha's heart compressed. "Company," he murmured, nodding without looking. Luca's voice dropped. "Baranov? Or subcontractors? Either way, run." They split, Misha down a service alley, Luca across tram tracks toward the marina. The spotters reacted too slow. By the time they converged, Misha had vaulted a chain-link fence into a scrapyard reeking of burnt coolant. Gunfire barked, 3 rounds, supersonic snaps overhead. He ducked behind a heap of crushed fiats, ribs howling. A final bullet pinged an oil drum, ricochet whining away. He scanned for exit, found a battered child's bicycle, missing 1 pedal. ridiculous, but wheels. He pushed it, hopping limping down the opposite gate. Once clear, he mounted, left leg working, right foot stabbing asphalt between rotations like a lopsided metronome. He careened downhill toward the river, tires squealing on wet cobble. At the pier, Luca waited astride a battered Zastava pickup, the Sturgeon's auxiliary fuel drums rattling in back. Seriously? Luca laughed over engine growl. A pink bike with glitter? It was available. Misha tossed it aside, vaulted into passenger seat. Luca floored gas. Headlights carved shaky tunnels through mist. Behind, more muzzle flashes, windscreen starred but held. They skidded onto the wharf where the Silver Sturgeon moored, 60-foot river tug, paint blistered, name stenciled in flaking Cyrillic. Luca slammed brakes. Get lines! Misha leapt, caught mooring rope, cranked the capstan. Each pull stabbed the rib, breath hitching. Spotters reached the dock just as Luca reversed the Zastava, pickup careening into them, scattering figures like tenpins. Gunfire renewed, rounds spitting sparks off bollards. Luca sprinted aboard, kicked the starter. Diesel coughed, sputtered. Again. On the third crank, the engine caught, belching black exhaust. Misha loosed the final line. Now, Luca. Throttles opened, prop churned slate water. The Sturgeon inched, then glided. Bullets plunked around hull, sending up vicious little geysers. One whined past Misha's ear, hot and persuasive. He ducked into the wheelhouse. Luca yanked levers, teeth bared in feral grin. Belgrade never looked so pretty, he said. Outside, sodium lights melted into distance. The city receded in amber smears, church spires dissolving in drizzle. Misha sank onto a tool chest, passport still damp against his chest, rib throbbing in time with the engine. He tasted rust again, but this one was cleaner. River water, metal decks, maybe the metallic note of luck. Behind them, the colonel's city lay prowling, unsettled, but for the length of the river ahead, black, oil-slick, unjudging, they had a corridor of possibility. Misha closed his eyes, just a blink, listening to the Sturgeon's diesel thrum marry the rain. Somewhere downstream, fog waited, and after that a checkpoint, a missile, more compromises. For tonight, breath was enough. Fog found them long before sunrise, rolling off the Danube in wool-thick sheets, coating the Silver Sturgeon's decks with a dew that tasted faintly of diesel and river rot. Misha kept the helm, while Luca dozed upright on an overturned bucket, chin buried in the collar of his jacket, fingers still wrapped around a chipped mug that had long since cooled. The engine idled at a grudging crawl, enough to keep steerage, not enough to advertise. 43 hours without real sleep, Misha tallied, thumb rubbing the bruise under his ribs as though it were a worry stone. Every 10 minutes he dialed the throttle back and let the current shoulder the weight, conserving fuel the way a miser nurses his last match. The fog swallowed the banks, the stars, the notion of direction itself. Only the depth sounder's green phosphor gave evidence of forward motion. He found comfort in that pale glow the way other men might in scripture. His stomach snarled. From a locker he produced a squat tin of sardines, the label half-peeled, salt blooming around the lid. He levered it open with the point of a folding knife and ate standing up, juice trickling between knuckles. Half the fillets he passed to Luca, rousing him with a nudge. "We're a floating banquet," Luca muttered, taking the tin. "If the colonel doesn't shoot us, cholesterol will." Misha attempted a smile. It tightened into a wince. "Switch in 15. I need the head." "Make it 10, Luca said, clearing his throat, the raspy sound oddly loud in the blanket of fog. When Misha returned, the wheelhouse smelled of brine and stale sweat. Luca sat at the controls, boots planted wide, shoulders filling the space as though he were built from the same timber as the hull. Misha gratefully slid onto the chart table, massaging his temple until fireworks danced at the edge of vision. The radio squawked, three quick bursts, then a voice in clipped English, every consonant ironed flat. Unidentified tug proceeding southbound at kilometer marker 264. This is Danube Customs Enforcement. Reduce speed and prepare for boarding. Luca's eyes narrowed. Customs? Here? Misha's mouth went dry. Chinese patrol. Belt and Road security detail. They bought the concession last year. Of course they did, Luca muttered, rolling his rars so softly it sounded like a growl. Outside, a searchlight speared the fog, its beam wobbling until it pinned the sturgeon's wheelhouse in a blinding halo. Every hinge in the cabin seemed to clench. Luca dropped the throttle to idle. The engine coughed, then fell silent, surrendering them to drift. Misha keyed the mic, voice hoarse. Customs vessel, we are experiencing mechanical trouble. Request you stand by while we attempt restart. Silence. Then the same voice, marginally frostier. Your transponder reports no malfunction. Heave to and prepare documentation. He clicked off. I'll handle paperwork, he told Luca, who snorted. You don't even have a real name tonight. Exactly why I'll handle it. Misha slipped outside, the river air instantly stealing warmth. He worked along the starboard rail, favoring his injured side, and tucked behind a coil of mooring rope. From inside his jacket, he drew a stubby, integrally suppressed Tokarev, one round already chambered, safety long removed. The pistol felt heavier than usual, as though it, too, doubted the odds. Fog parted just enough to reveal their pursuer, a sleek river cutter, low in the water, engines humming with factory confidence. Blue strobes painted the mist in ghostly flashes. At its bow, a shepherd mix barked non-stop, claws scrabbling against the deck. Two uniformed officers stood behind the railings, one leveled binoculars while the other cradled an automatic carbine. Both wore the polite boredom of men who rarely meet resistance. A long-legged heron, apparently as disoriented as anyone, fluttered down and settled atop the sturgeon's port rail, head cocked in judgment. Luca saw it through the side window and made a face, half humor, half omen. The bird's feet clicked on rusty metal, and for a breath, the only sounds were its low croak and the dog's distant barking. The cutter edged closer. Searchlight swept again, across Luca's profile, across empty hatches, finally along the coil where Misha crouched. He flattened against the hull, breath locked. Light lingered, then glided on. He exhaled silently, counting heartbeats. In the wheelhouse, Luca cleared his throat, once, sharply. Their agreed signal. Misha eased the pistol upward. One shot, he told himself. Anything more, and the river would crack open with return fire. He waited for the beam to pass over the sturgeon's forward winch, a bright, predictable stroke, then squeezed. The suppressed report sounded like a door closing softly. Glass burst on the cutter's roof. The searchlight snapped dark, its shattered lens shedding diamonds onto the water. Chaos bloomed. The dog went berserk, barks ricocheting across the river. Someone shouted in Mandarin, another in accented English, "Hold fire! Hold!" Luca rammed the starter. Diesel sputtered, wheezed, caught. He jammed the throttles, the stern dug a trench in the fog as propellers churned. The heron shrieked and launched skyward, wings beating a frantic drum. Behind them, the cutter's deck erupted with muzzle flashes, orange pinpricks swallowed almost instantly by mist. Bullets punched the water, lead thuds more felt than heard. Misha stayed low, shoulder braced against steel, while river spray peppered his face. One round clanged off the winch inches from his ear. Another slapped the stack, showering him with rust flakes. He willed his body smaller, pressing rib against hull despite the lance of pain that followed. The sturgeon clawed forward, its battered engine finding new profanity. Fog became their accomplice, knitting shut behind them. Gunfire dwindled to sporadic, angry bursts, then to the distant growl of engines losing pursuit. Only when the sound of the cutter faded did Luca throttle back. For several loaded seconds, neither man spoke. Wind hissed through broken weld seams. The heron was long gone. Misha holstered the Tokarev and slid into the wheelhouse, skin humming with aftershock. Luca's hands trembled on the wheel. He masked it by tugging a lever. You owe me a new searchlight, Luca said, voice pitched low. I'll carve one from my next paycheck, Misha replied, his pulse still thumped in his throat. Your next paycheck, Luca scoffed. That assumes we live to cash it. He pointed to a bench along the bulkhead. Shirt off. Misha hesitated. Now, Luca barked, phlegm in the syllable. He peeled layers, jacket, sweater, once white undershirt, and sat. Rib and shoulder were constellations of purple and yellow. Luca fetched a roll of sailcloth tape from a toolbox, the adhesive smelling of tar and sun-baked canvas. With surprising gentleness, he wound it around Misha's torso, each pass drawing a hiss. Hold still. Luca finished the wrap, tore the tape with his teeth, and patted the bandage. That should keep your lungs inside. Misha eased a breath. Comforting diagnosis. A tinny chirp interrupted them. Their prepaid sat phone wedged near the compass, caller ID, a string of zeros. Misha's stomach knotted. He hit receive, a pre-recorded voice unfurled, calm, female, each syllable spliced between background notes of a sommelier describing Pinot Noir. Currants, subtle leather, finish of regret. Mara, she had always loved covert jokes. The message proper began. If you're hearing this, the agency's blown my cover. Baranov requisitioned two more teams. One's already downriver. Iron gates by nightfall. Lose the tug if you must, just burn everything. And Misha. A pause, like breath held at the edge of confession. Winter can still end. Click. Transmission dead. He stared at the handset, thumb hovering over redial, as though stubbornness alone could conjure her back. Heat pricked behind his eyes. He blinked it away. What did she say? Luca asked, wiping greasy fingers on his pants. That Baranov isn't the only shark. He pocketed the phone, voice brittle. Luca studied him for a beat, then jabbed a thumb at a portable projector rigged to the ceiling. Showtime. Misha powered it. A crimson map bloomed across the whitewashed bulkhead, Danube twists glowing like arteries. A pulsing red triangle marked their position. Another flared at the river's narrow throat. Iron gates, Luca muttered. Steep rock, shallow pride. 70 kilometers, Misha said. Patrols every 10. Luca returned to the helm, knuckles whitening. Then we better find fresh fog. They settled into silence, broken only by the engine's steady drone and occasional slosh of hull meeting current. Luca steered. Misha kept watch, cigarette ember reflected in the window like a warning light. Clouds thinned overhead, letting bruised dawn seep through, yet the fog at water level clung on, an accomplice that hadn't yet decided which side paid better. After an hour, fatigue nailed Misha's eyelids. He passed the pistol to Luca, exchanged a curt nod, and slid to the deck beside the warmth of the engine block. Prop vibrations traveled through steel into bone. With every pulse, his taped ribs throbbed but did not break. He allowed himself a shallow drift toward sleep, the last image behind his closing eyes, the red triangle inching south, heartbeat by heartbeat, toward cliffs that weighted like jawbones. The Danube kept moving even when men could not. Misha jerked awake before his eyes opened, roused by a change in the boat's rhythm. The diesel engine no longer droned smoothly. It coughed in uneven gulps, each backfire bouncing between sheer cliffs that now hemmed the Danube like prison walls. When he forced his lids apart, dawn had burned away enough fog to reveal limestone rising on either side, wet with condensation, streaked black where mineral springs wept. An unseen gull wheeled overhead, its cry swallowed whole by the gorge, so that the echo arrived first and the bird's own voice trailed after, thin and bewildered. He rolled to his knees, testing the taped ribs. The pain was a coal shoved deeper, hotter, but still contained. Luca stood at the helm, silhouette big as a wardrobe, one palm resting on the throttle, the other gripping a mug of scalded coffee that smelled of burnt chicory. His jaw pumped on a piece of nicotine gum. He reserved cigarettes for calmer stretches of river, but the habit kept failing. He kept catching himself chewing air, tossing the spent gum overboard, digging another foil square from his pocket. "How long was I out?" Misha croaked, throat raw. 40 minutes, Luca said without turning. "Long enough to steal my beauty sleep." Misha stretched, vertebrae snapping, then hobbled forward. The sturgeon's prow punched through a skin of floating leaves, chestnut, maple, junk washed down from fields upstream. Behind them, a mass of fog closed like an elevator door, erasing the river they had already survived. Ahead, the river narrowed further, seething white around hidden rocks. Luca throttled down to half to keep the bow from corkscrewing. The cliffs threw their engine noise back at them in scattered consonants. Misha could smell ozone, or thought he could, the way every soldier eventually sniffs imaginary artillery before the first shell lands. He flicked the Grundig handheld radio on low volume. Static rose, then a fragment of a Serbian folk ballad, then more static. The battery indicator hissed red. Useless, he thought, but left it running. Sometimes noise itself felt like company. Luca nodded toward a shoulder of cliff where a rusted iron cross leaned at 40 degrees, half lost to ivy. Monk put that there after a ferry sank in 62. Whole wedding party went down. They say the bride still walks the ledge. Misha grunted. If she asks for a cigarette, tell her we're out. Cynic. Luca smiled without humor. A thunderclap split the sky. Not the weather. The sound was cleaner, knife-edged, followed by a shrill metallic squeal as though someone were tearing steel sheet in the clouds. Luca's coffee mug toppled, spilling dark arcs across the wheel console. Both men tilted their heads in the same instinctive dog-like motion. What the hell was? The question died. Above the gorge, a slate-gray dart ripped south to north, low enough that Misha saw vapor peel off its fins. No engine whine preceded it. The thing outran its own scream. A hypersonic missile, he registered with cold certainty, launched for some distant chessboard, but wobbling offline, hunting a new trajectory too late for its handlers to recall it. He had one half breath to grab the rail. The missile exploded into the cliff face starboard, rock and magnesium brilliance fusing in a flash the color of surgical lights. Shockwaves slammed outward. Air became physical, a wall. The sturgeon lifted on one side, corkboard plucked by a cosmic thumb and forefinger. Windows imploded inward. Luca's body cartwheeled. Misha felt himself leave the deck, ribs screaming as tape cinched, and then water swallowed everything. Perspective slid, blurred, and for a heartbeat the narrator abandoned him, latching onto Luca instead. Darkness. Thick, cold, immediate. Luca's first thought was of the charm in his boot. Second thought was air. He kicked, boots dragging like anchors, arms paddling wild until lungs begged. Light above. Broken stripes of sunrise where surface danced. He burst through, gasping, spitting river silt. Something bumped his thigh. Misha's marble? No, impossible. A drift of fuel gloss shimmered rainbow over the chop, stinking of diesel. End Luca's fragment. Camera swerves back to Misha. Misha surfaced 10 meters away, coughing Danube out of sinuses, ears ringing high C. He tasted mud and burned explosives. A charred plank floated near. He grabbed it, vision pulsing black at edges. Adrenaline kept panic caged, barely. He scanned. Luca there, alive, shoulders heaving. Aft section of the sturgeon upside down, props still idling in air like a crippled insect. Luca, he rasped. The gorge answered with hollow echoes, Luca, then silence. He paddled closer, one-armed because the rib pain went molten if both shoulders moved. Luca lunged and grabbed the same plank. Together they hung like laundry in rough current. Bank, Luca wheezed, pointing to the Romanian side where a sliver of shale slope broke from the cliff. It looked unreachable, yet the river's hydraulic shoved debris that way. They kicked weakly, letting current hammer them until toes scraped gravel. Shallow water first, numbing, then ankle, then knee. Misha's boots sucked mud. He collapsed on hands and knees, chest heaving hollow notes. Luca flopped beside him, expelled a string of profanity that sounded almost lyrical. They lay a minute, maybe two, letting blood find new routes. Above, gulls circled the smoke column curling from shattered cliff. Another bird's cry intervened. No, not a bird, a goat. Somewhere on the ledge a bell tinkled, calm as Sunday morning, oblivious to war toys gone astray. Hypersonic, Luca said at length, still breathless. Some Russian test or NATO intercept? Doesn't matter, Misha said. God missed, and we caught the ricochet. He rolled to sitting. Hypothermia protocol, whispered through old training. Strip wet, wring clothes, heat core, check pulse every five. They were sodden, shivering, lips already bluing. A toppled drift of driftwood, irony too thick, littered the bank. Misha crawled, gathered sticks, hands fumbling. Luca dug in his pocket, produced a red cardboard matchbook from Kafana veteran, the corner's pulp. He struck one, sputter, fail. Another, third, caught, flame thin as a confession. They bent shields around it, feeding slivers until a sullen fire took. Misha's teeth rattled in sync with the flames. He peeled off his outer jacket, wrung river from the sleeves, steam rising. Luca stomped boots empty, muttering. Misha remembered the emergency flare, waterproof tube stashed in his waistband earlier. He jammed it into Luca's shaking hand. Luca's thumb hesitated, pressing the striker groove. Signal them and they'll find us, Misha warned. Not a signal, Luca said. Beacon for Mara if she's listening. And for anyone hunting Baranov's dogs. Sometimes the only way forward is to light a bigger bonfire than they expect. He cracked the flare. Red magnesium roared daylight against cliffs. Smoke spiraled upward, clashing with the missile's residue. Somewhere above, the goat bleated, unimpressed. The wind carried faint radio chatter, tinny, distant, bouncing off rock faces like faulty surround sound. Grid 41 Delta, thermal shows two heat signatures. Confirm. Agency kill team, by accent and clipped cadence. Likely deployed upriver once satellites flagged the missile anomaly. Maybe looking for warhead debris, maybe for survivors to interrogate. Either way, they'd triangulate the flare inside 5 minutes. Misha's hand drifted to the soaked Tokarev, useless for the moment. He met Luca's eyes, saw the same gamble. Shepherd's shack, Luca said, nodding toward a cleft halfway up the cliff where smoke from some earlier campfire smudged stone. Climb in this state? Misha asked. Rather negotiate uphill than freeze here. Luca flicked St. Nicholas' charm for luck. They stomped out the fire, kicked sand over glowing embers, a gesture more hopeful than effective. Misha took point, his boots slipped on shale, sending shards clattering rivulet-like back to river. He gripped roots, pulled, each strain ripping his taped ribs anew. Halfway, his vision tunneled, but Luca's shove between shoulder blades kept him moving. The shack appeared, a lean-to of gray timber braced against rock, door rope hinged, padlock rusted open. Inside, goat smell, straw pallets, chipped enamel basin. A cracked propaganda poster of Ceausescu stared from one wall, mustache eaten by damp. They collapsed again, backs to opposite walls. Luca fumbled a pocket torch, its beam jittering. Supplies, a grease-stained blanket, 2 cans of plum brandy, sewing kit, shepherd's coat with fleece lining. Luxury resort, Luca quipped, ripping open the coat and forcing it over Misha's shoulders first. He then took the thread and curved needle from the sewing kit. You're leaking. He gestured to Misha's shoulder, where a metal shard gleamed through shirt fabric. Misha hadn't felt it yet. Shock protected. He braced himself, bit down on a strip of coat lining. Luca sterilized needle tip in lighter flame, one of the brand new Bics from his jacket, and fished for the fragment. Each jab poured black into Misha's vision, but no outward sound escaped save a hiss. When the shard clinked into the basin, Luca threaded coarse cotton through flesh, ugly sutures, functional. His fingers shook not from cold now, but from memory. Misha saw him mouth a prayer, the syllables old church Slavonic, the way someone might whisper a phone number they can't forget. Stitching done, Luca cracked one brandy tin. They passed it, grimacing. Rain started, a soft patter on tin roof. bar 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 like distant machine gun reverb. The matchbook lay spent, cover illustration of a smiling waitress peeling off. Misha tore the face free, slipped it into passport wallet. Habit or need for company, not sure. Radio static filtered through the gorge, louder now, voices clearer. Targets likely on foot, recon drones grounded by weather. Orders, capture, lethal force authorized if. A crackle, then Colonel Baranov himself, unmistakable baritone riding the channel. Remember, gentlemen, Varga bleeds like anyone. Bring me his lungs, the rest is salvage. Misha laughed once, a bark. Luca tilted his head, brow knotted. Ironic, Misha said. The fragment that killed his cousin? I sold it. Thought it harmless, just lines of code. He sipped brandy, let it burn. Baranov never forgave, I never apologized. And my sister, Luca said quietly, rolling his R's softer than before, bled out because Russian mercenaries misread a map. Same war, different page. He exhaled, slow, calm, as if setting these facts on a table between them. Silence settled, not comfortable but earned. Outside, goat bell again, ting-ting, somewhere higher, drifting through rain and static. Misha pushed to his feet, wobbling. We can't stay. They have dogs, drones when weather clears. Bridge 4 kilometers east, Luca said. Rail line. Catch a maintenance cart, ride it to Orshova. My cousin has diesel, passports, limp excuses. He smirked. Maybe a dry shirt. Then we move at dark. Rest. Luca's voice was no louder than the drip of rain off the eaves. Breaths steamed from their mouths in staccato bursts, miniature engines stalling in the iron blue dawn. The cornfields were rows of skeletal stalks rimed white, each crunch beneath their boots announcing itself like breaking bone. Luca led, shoulders hunched inside the shepherd's fleece coat, the Saint Nicholas charm ticking against his laces with every step. Misha followed 2 paces back, one arm stitched to his ribs by sailcloth tape, the other buried in the coat for warmth, fingers brushing the Tokarev he'd stripped, dried and re-oiled during the night. They left the shack's shadow at first light, hugging drainage ditches, crossing a fallow lot where frost made the weeds glitter a counterfeit silver. Above them, the sky looked hammered tin, flat and unforgiving, promising more weather than warmth. 4 kilometers, Luca had said. Halfway now, maybe less. A windmill, blades frozen mid-spin, marked the last 100 meters before the roadside chapel. The structure was squat. Limestone blocks mortared in the shape of repentance, roof tiled with rotting cedar shakes. A narrow lane curved past it toward the rail bridge beyond. To an untrained eye, the place was abandoned, but Misha's headache flared the moment he saw the missing padlock on the iron gate. Someone had gone in after the last snowfall. Someone organized enough to pick locks, but polite enough to close the gate behind them. Luca read the same signs. He crouched, glove touching a boot heel print that hadn't yet thawed. 2 hours old, maybe 3, full kit. His words fogged between them, dissolved. Misha scanned the tree line, saw faint glints, scopes catching weak sunrise, and felt his pulse chisel away at the fresh sutures. Kill team, agency, not Baranov, different impatience. Luca's answer was to unsling the stubby Polish carbine he'd salvaged from the sturgeon's locker, wipe condensation from the bolt. 1 magazine taped upside down to the one seated, 30 rounds live, 30 waiting. Chapel has thicker walls than corn, Misha muttered. Take the altar side, we circle in like penitents. They pushed the gate, no squeak, hinges recently oiled, and shuffled up the gravel path, playing their roles. Weary pilgrims, backs bowed by private sin. Frost-crusted votive candles lined the sill of a shattered lancet window. Inside, incense ghosts still clung to the air, though the priest who'd burned them was likely decades dead. The pews were overturned, cushions gutted. Iconostasis panels lay in a glittering mosaic on the flagstones, saints' faces fractured but eerily serene. Near the nave's south wall stood a porcelain figurine of Saint Agatha, palm-sized, robe chipped at the hem yet miraculously upright amid the ruin. Misha's gaze snagged on it, proof, perhaps, that not everything fell when bullets started flying. Frost melted off their boots, puddling on stone as they advanced. Misha felt, rather than heard, the safety click on the far side of the doorway. He whispered, "Now," and dropped behind the nearest pew. Luca pivoted toward the apse, rifle tight to cheek. The first shot came from the choir loft, suppressed, precise, wood splintered where Misha's shoulder had been a breath earlier. He rolled, fired twice at the loft rail. One round sparked off wrought iron, the other punched plaster. A grunt, then silence. Kill team leader's voice rang through a throat mic, bouncing off holy stone, clipped military English, vowels sanded to edges. "Varga, you are inside a kill box. Comply for exfil, no more blood." Misha's laugh tasted like chipped enamel. He slid a fresh magazine from his pocket, the metal colder than anything outside. "Your box is missing a lid," he shouted back in Serbian, just to annoy them. Two operatives stormed the nave from opposing transepts, matte black carbines raised. Luca hosed a 5-round burst, brass casings spraying like votive candles spilled at a vigil. One operative spun, hit in the hip screaming, the other dove behind the battered confessional, rounds chewing cedar paneling to ribbons. Misha low crawled toward the sacristy door, ribs screaming every meter. A quick peek, empty room, a medieval coat rack, a tin of altar wine. Good. He kicked the door shut behind, jammed a broken pew leg through the handle, and listened to hasty boots outside trying to coordinate. "Bravo, 2, flank left, Charlie element hold entry, confirm casualty. Radio discipline, crisp, they'd be through in seconds." He scanned for anything lethal. Silver chalice? Too sentimental. Then he spotted the thurible chain, iron links dense and knobby. He wrapped it once around his fist, felt the heft. A medieval solution to a modern problem. Boots at the door. Splinters flew as a suppressed burst chewed the latch. The makeshift brace held half a heartbeat, then failed. The door swung. Misha yanked, chain whipping forward, iron sensor cannonballing into a helmet visor. Plastic spider cracked, the operator folded without ceremony. Misha dove for the man's sidearm, a polymer SIG warm from body heat. He checked the chamber, one up, and pressed forward. Perspective slid to Luca for the beat-to-beat of pure chaos. Luca's world narrowed to trigger, target, lungs burning apology for every round expelled. He counted his first magazine dry at 19 rounds, 2 malfunctions cleared with heel taps, then twisted the taped spare into place. 30 more, each precious as baptismal water. "St. Nicholas keep score," he muttered, citing the confessional. Wood still trembled from the earlier burst. He fired in threes. Tap, tap, tap. Silence. One less pair of lungs for Baranov or Washington. Back to Misha. He dragged the unconscious operator behind a font, stripped the plate carrier, found a field dressing. His own shoulder wept through Luca's sutures. He packed gauze, cinched the bandage with shaking fingers. 10-second triage while rounds snapped above. Kill team leader barked again. "You're bleeding out your clock, Varga. Last chance before I turn this chapel to gravel." Misha raised the stolen SIG, sighting the loft where a muzzle flickered. He squeezed until the slide locked back. Weight of an empty magazine, useless as a confession after the priest walks out. He ejected, slapped in the operator's spare. 3 rounds left. Clock's been broken for years, he called. A new voice, serene, female, threaded through every earpiece. Agency channel hijacked. Mara. Calm as bedtime. "Stand down, Alpha Unit. Kill order suspended under Directive 14. Confirm receipt." Static. Then the leader, cold fury strangled by protocol. "Stoppy, mother." To his men, "Cease fire. Check wounds." Echoes settled. Smoke drifted ceiling ward, wavering in weak stained glass light. Somewhere a casing pinged off marble, lonely as a penny dropping into an empty well. Luca kept the rifle trained while silhouettes in matte gear emerged, hands raised. One clutched a thigh tourniquet, another dragged the sensor-struck man, helmet dangling. Their leader stepped forward, sunken cheeks, gray temples, offering nothing but a curt nod. Medical evac inbound. You two weren't on today's salvage list. Misha, chest heaving, stared down the SIG until his knuckles bleached. Plans change. He thumbed the slide catch, let it slam forward to underline the words. The leader's eyes flicked to the porcelain St. Agatha, miraculously intact amid the pew splinters. Miracles are above my pay grade. He signaled retreat, boots echoing out the nave, leaving only the stench of propellant and the metallic tang of near death. As their Humvee engines faded, Luca leaned against a column, breathing through clenched teeth. Either Mara loves you, or she needs you for worse. Difference? Misha managed, then slumped onto a shattered pew. His hands wouldn't unclench. He forced them open, reached for his battered phone. 4% battery, one unheard voicemail from a number he still knew by heart. Thumb hovered. Pressed play. The voice of his estranged wife, Sophia, spilled into the hollowed church, soft, uncertain, recorded weeks ago, judging by the shaky date stamp. Misha, I heard about the Novi Sad incident. If you're alive, please, just send one word. Luca knows how to reach me. I want a breath, like someone stepping to the edge of a rooftop. I want to stop hating the silence between us. Message ended. No epilogue. The phone screen went black, battery spent. Misha's hands trembled so hard the device clattered to the floor beside St. Agatha's chipped robe. Luca crouched, picked up both relic and phone, set them in Misha's lap. Miracle survived. So did she. For a moment, the only sound was snow beginning to whisper through the shell-holed roof, flakes fine as cigarette ash, settling on spent casings, on pew splinters, on their shoulders like absolution they hadn't asked for. Outside, an engine coughed, a battered Peugeot 205, doors ajar, keys dangling. Luca's grin returned, small but genuine. Providence owns a French car, apparently. Ashtrays full of sunflower seeds, but it'll run. Misha rose, every joint a lawsuit, tucked the figurine inside his coat pocket where the marble had once ridden. Then, let's steal salvation before someone invoices us. They limped into the whitening daylight, boots scuffing fresh powder. By the time the Peugeot fishtailed onto the lane, snow had already filled half their footprints, erasing the morning one quiet flake at a time. Snow held its silent dominion over the road long after the Peugeot's wipers had abandoned their resistance. Each swipe smeared slush across the fractured windshield, leaving Misha to navigate by the dim gnawing of the headlights upon the drifts of white. Luca commandeered the wheel. He insisted his ribs were less battered, and maintained the speedometer's flirtation with 50, even when gusts bullied the small car sideways. Somewhere south, the border loomed, a smattering of sodium lamps and customs booths blinking Morse code through the tempest. Misha clutched Mara's tablet, its glass cobwebbed with cracks from the chapel skirmish. Battery at a meager 13%, signal bars flickering like the fading pulse of a dying man. He coaxed the device awake one final time. The GPS arrow throbbed, inching toward a cluster of dots labeled in Cyrillic, Capicule Parking. A refrigerated convoy, bound for Istanbul, midnight departure. The coordinates were time-stamped 12 hours prior, but Christmas freight moved at the leisurely pace of tortoises. Strawberries and lithium batteries were equally indifferent to schedules. He nestled the tablet beneath his thigh to warm it and cracked the window. Icy air needled his sinuses, but purged the stench of singed propellant from the cabin. Luca flicked the lighter Misha had filched from the Peugeot's ashtray, plastic, adorned with a cartoon panda, and passed it over. "Joke's on us," Luca muttered around the cigarette he valiantly attempted to ignite. "Border guards won't even wave at this heap." "They'll wave if the radiator hisses," Misha replied, tapping the gauge. The needle flirted dangerously with the red. They breasted a hill. Below, mercury lamps illuminated a procession of tractor trailers queued nose to tail, each trailer bleached white like a drawer in a morgue, refrigeration units exhaling mist into the already dense air. A waystation sign blinked through the flurry. "We acknowledge only truth in kilograms," the poetic musing of some bureaucratic mind. Luca navigated off the highway, tires crunching frozen gravel. He cut the engine midway down the ramp, surrendering to momentum to roll them to a stop behind a Serbian grain carrier. The silence felt sacramental after hours of relentless wind. 5 minutes, Misha declared. "We locate truck 724. The manifest says textiles, less likely to sniff us out. And more likely to be waved through," Luca finished. He inspected the Polish carbine, racked it once with mittened hands, then stowed it beneath the driver's seat. "The stowaway plan still makes me feel 16 again. Except everything aches." They sprung the doors. Snowflakes eddied, stinging exposed skin like thrown rice. Misha hobbled past the idling rigs, each one a slumbering behemoth. One driver smoked outside his cab, face glowing azure in the light of his phone. Another slumbered, boot propped on the dash, a television chattering Russian sitcoms. No one spared a glance for two more shadows in the dappled veil of snowfall. Trailer 724 squatted fourth in the secondary lane, condensation spiraling from its vents. Padlock flimsy, chain newer. Misha produced a bolt cutter swiped from the Peugeot's trunk. One bite, metal surrendered. He eased the doors ajar. A gust of antiseptic cold slapped them. Metal ribs lined the interior, slick with frost. The faint citrus peel scent of old oranges lingered beneath the ammonia tang of the reefer. Pallet straps dangled like ill intentions. Luca ascended first, boots skidding. Misha followed, easing the lock back through its loop so no guard would notice. Darkness devoured them as the doors sealed shut. Within the aluminum coffin, the temperature hovered a notch above freezing. Their breath materialized, clouded, evaporated. The floor plating whimpered under weight. Each step shouted to the thermal sensors Luca feared. Misha crouched behind a stack of shrink-wrapped cartons, peeled back a corner, women's jeans, counterfeit Italian label. Lightweight. Good for insulation and for absorbing bullets, not so much for stopping them. He retrieved Mara's tablet, 9% life, and linked to the truck's diagnostic Bluetooth, the default password still admin OO. A schematic blossomed. GPS module accessible, he reprogrammed the next waypoint, diverting the rig west at the junction where the E80 forked toward Sofia. If everything else went south, Luca could leap there and vanish into the mountains he'd navigated as a boy smuggling tobacco. "Done," he murmured. Luca exhaled warmth into cupped hands. "So we ride to the first Turkish toll booth. Then what? Brandish passports reeking of goat? I hand Lingwei her key. She's the buyer of last resort. You still trust her? I trust her punctuality. And timing suggests she'll intercept here." As if summoned, brakes gasped outside, another truck docking beside them. Metal shuddered as two ponderous doors swung inward. Voices seeped through the wall, the lilt of Mandarin overlapped by Russian oaths. Baranov's henchmen. Timing indeed. Seconds ticked past like misaligned gears. Luca mouthed a prayer. Misha drew the Tokarev, checked its action by touch. Slide frigid, oil congealed but functional. The trailer door banged open. Muzzle beams sliced the dark, carving cones of white over silver insulation. Three figures entered, Colonel Baranov first, silhouette unmistakable, shadowed by a crouching soldier sweeping low. Behind them, a fourth silhouette waited at the threshold, Ling Wei. Her winter coat hung straight as brushed ink, silk scarf, a pale stream in the floodlights. Baranov's knuckles wrapped metal, a mocking applause. "Varga, I know your fondness for refrigeration. Come out and let us chat." Misha thumbed the safety off but held his position. Ling's voice carried, every consonant buffed to a sheen. "Colonel, let us not mar the merchandise. My principles need the encryption intact." Baranov rumbled a deep, sardonic chuckle. "He will relinquish it. He dislikes prolonged pain." "Wrong again," Misha called, emerging from behind the jeans. Gun aimed, The flashlight glare forced him to squint. Still, he kept his sights trained on Baranov's sternum. Luka mirrored him 6 meters to the right, using a pallet as a bulwark. Four-way stalemate now. Luka's sight on the soldier, soldiers on Luka, Misha tracking Baranov, Ling Wei's free hand inside her coat, likely on her own weapon, but still unreadable. The frigid hiss of vapor enveloped their ankles as Misha released his thumb from the thermostat override. A brittle cold seeped through the steel ribs of the refrigeration unit. Even the beams of the flashlight seemed fragile in the settling fog. Baranov's eyes narrowed at the sudden chill. "Games again, Varga?" Misha responded by sliding the virus-infected key across the deck, its plastic sheath skidding to a halt at Ling Wei's boot. She bent down in an unhurried manner, as if selecting tea leaves, and pocketed it. "Payment," she reminded the colonel, her voice smooth with a sharp edge. Baranov flexed his gloved fingers on his pistol. "After my apology," he pointed the muzzle at Misha's chest. Two things occurred before he could pull the trigger. Luka, concealed behind a pallet, uttered an age-old river proverb, "Fast water swallows slow warnings," and kicked the stack. Cardboard boxes burst open, a cascade of denim spilling into the aisle. At the same moment, the emergency fan of the refrigeration unit activated with a deafening shriek, spewing ice crystals that obscured their vision. The soldier's first shot tore through fabric, the second sparked off the floor. Misha dropped flat, his ribs screaming in pain. He sensed, rather than saw, Luka leap over the slush of jeans, shoulder-checking Baranov, and vanish through the half-latch door into the raging snowstorm outside. The standoff deteriorated into a cacophony of Russian, Mandarin, and Serbian, all muffled by the roaring fan. Baranov pursued Luka. Ling Wei's hand flashed, wielding a short, lacquered handle blade. She slashed the colonel's forearm, pivoted towards the exit, then reconsidered. Her eyes locked onto Misha through the fog. No smile, no promise, just a subtle nod, as if debts were now settled. She slipped away. Baranov clutched the wound with one hand, rage steaming in the frozen light. "I still have you." Misha pushed to his knees, his pistol empty, lungs burning in air that reeked of cold metal and gunpowder. "Take your victory," he rasped, "but know the key you lost is a disease you can't feel until it's devouring your organs." Baranov's response was a backhand that tasted of copper and cloves. Darkness folded in, layered, strangely soft. Luka felt none of that gentleness. The outside world lacerated his face with wind and rock salt as he sprinted alongside the idling line of rigs. Drivers cursed from behind safety glass. Horns blared. He tore open the door of a sandblasted Mercedes panel van, its hazard lights blinking nervously. No keys. He cracked open the steering column with a screwdriver taken from the Peugeot, crossed two wires, and the diesel engine sputtered to life. Snow obscured the outbound gate. He rammed the gear stick into first and accelerated. Guards yelled. A baton struck the side mirror. A warning shot buried itself in the rear doors. He crashed through the barrier, splinters bouncing off the hood, and kept shifting gears until the speedometer vibrated. Hours blurred together, villages with shuttered bakeries, gas stations reeking of burnt coffee, the border with Hungary, then Austria, then the bleak white of a Bavarian morning. He abandoned the van outside a laundromat in Passau, torched the seat with a splash of diesel, and walked the remainder of the distance to the rail station, bills stiff with blood rustling in his pocket. The German-Czech regional train dropped him off near Freilassing. A hall of bright plexiglass and unwavering cameras awaited. Luka, third person close. He wiped sweat off on the denim jacket he'd stolen from an unguarded dryer. The St. Nicholas charm tapped his boot as he entered the customs queue. 10 travelers. Fluorescent light so intense it eradicated shadows. A vending machine hummed along the far wall, its front panel advertising sugar-free cola with vinyl German cheer. River proverb, coins never drown. He fed the machine a blood-flecked 5-euro note, punched C7. Nothing. He thumped it once. The can dropped. A small mercy. Next, the guard barked, 40-ish, buzz-cut, eyes dulled by shift fatigue. Luca handed over the Hungarian passport Ilya forged. The photo was close enough. Same crooked nose, same weary grin. The guard scanned, stamped. A second guard lifted Luca's sleeve, noticed the taped ribs, started to ask. Luca muttered, Schiffswerft Unfall, shipyard accident, rolling the R's like river water. The guard winced at the bruises, waved him through. 3 steps later, Luca exhaled, cola fizz stinging his throat. He left the half-empty can on the ledge, dug in his pocket for the dented panda lighter, and flipped the lid twice, rhythm steady, as if signaling someone who might still be watching downstream. No gunshots followed him. Only the chimes of the announcement system, brisk and German, declaring a delayed connection to Oberhausen. Misha, or someone wearing his limp and his stubble, stands in the arrivals corridor of Istanbul's Sirkeci Customs Hall 2 nights later. The marble floor gleams like melting ice. Neon arrows bleed pink across wet footprints. His left ankle refuses to bend, so each step clicks, drags, clicks, a metronome of pain. A stray tabby darts from behind a newspaper kiosk, weaves through the winding passport line, and brushes his calf. He crouches, strokes the cat once. Static crackles from the cheap fleece of his sleeve. The cat springs away and vanishes beneath a vending cart. Voices meld. A sing-song loudspeaker in Turkish announces the midnight bus to Ankara. An English backpacker laughs too loudly. A child hums a lullaby off-key. None of it penetrates the fluorescence buzzing overhead. He reaches the window. The officer, a man with eyebrows like accent marks, flips through the Hungarian passport Luca once ridiculed. A UV lamp ghosts the watermark. The officer frowns at the entry stamp, at the stitched-up shoulder visible beneath the collar, at the faint smell of freezer burn clinging to the pages. Purpose of visit? Misha's throat aches. He slides a burner phone across the counter instead of answering. The screen illuminates a recording app, already armed, one button lit red. He presses play, leans toward the microphone, and speaks softly in Serbian. Tell my wife I died in 2019. He drops the phone into the metal trash can by the exit. Inside, a lone cigarette ember still glows against an aluminum soda pull tab. Plastic hisses as lithium meets heat. The screen fractures, recording light flickering like a dying firefly. Somewhere deeper in the terminal, a door slams, then 2 short, unmistakable cracks, suppressed rounds, no echo, but every bird in the rafters lifts. Travelers freeze, look around, decide quickly to keep moving. The customs officer stamps the passport, entry granted, and slides it back without meeting eyes. Misha nods once, limps toward the sliding doors. Outside, night air carries the briny breath of the Bosphorus and, faintly, the wash of water against pilings, a sound that could still be the Danube if you close your eyes and deceive yourself. From a distant minaret, the call to prayer unfurls, thin as filament, stitching itself to the river noise until the two are indistinguishable. He keeps walking. If footsteps follow, they remain just beyond the range of the tinnitus still ringing in his ears. Audio fades here, water slapping concrete, muezzin's call winding through it, a final click of a dented lighter that might be miles away or might be yesterday. Thank you for choosing Astory Publishing.